Welcome to the Elements of Being podcast, where I dissect and explore the minds and habits of psychologists, filmmakers, writers, and industry icons. Essentially, we examine the mental and emotional narratives and processes that steer the social stream of consciousness. Truly, a chance to geek out over the psychology behind human behavior. Each episode is a glimpse into the trends and patterns of human behavior and the underlying influences that navigate us into different directions. Whether we primarily focus on nutrition, the environment, or the unconscious, guests share insights, thought-provoking lessons, the nuances of creativity, and the elements of being us. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Brenna Simmons St. Ange, the executive director of the Alliance Center in Colorado. She's a pragmatic visionary with over 15 years of leadership experience, including a decade in corporate social responsibility. During the pandemic, Brenna launched the Regenerative Recovery Coalition, a coalition now with over 335 members working together to build Colorado forward towards a regenerative future. Through large public-private partnerships, Brenna is leading the coalition to create equitable social structures that will foster shared prosperity on a healthy planet. As a dynamic change agent, Brenna leads with a nonprofit heart and a business mind, leveraging holistic approaches to implement and scale solutions to some of the largest issues humanity faces. In our interview, we break down the concept of a regenerative future and the individual and social efforts required for systems-level change, as well as the gap between idealism and pragmatism. We also examine how to secure the attention of policymakers and corporations and how they should rethink and measure success and growth within a capitalist system. So with this being said, let's jump in. Brenna, thanks for sharing the table with me today.
Good to be here with you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Now, you are the executive director of the Alliance Center in Denver, Colorado, an organization with a mission, a very big mission, to build a robust, localized economy that meets human needs abundantly and equitably, providing clean water, air, energy, and food, and providing a living laboratory and co-working space for community leaders, social changing organizations, and more. Over the last 7 years, the Alliance Center has been responsible for over 233 legislative wins. And most recently, the Speaker of the Colorado House of Representatives asked the organization to create a stimulus project list. This body of work influenced 20 new state laws and the allocation of $456 million in ARPA funds this year. Much of this effort took place while you were pregnant, and now you're raising a newborn and a four-year-old. Clearly, you're a superhero parent and an incredible advocate for the environment and regenerative business. How do you still have time for rock climbing and whitewater rafting?
Well, you know, there's only 36 hours in the day, so that certainly helps. Jokes aside, you know, I think it's really a matter of finding what you love to do in your personal life and your professional life and making meaning out of that. And I'm very blessed to do that with my role with the Alliance Center and also my role as a mom and a wife with my family. You know, we really try to carve out family time on the weekends and get out in nature as much as possible. That definitely is harder with young ones running around. We used to get outside a lot more when it was just my husband and I. And I think just finding a new pace and adapting to life with kiddos and, you know, how do we bring nature and the environment into our life and into a way that, you know, you can with the baby. So just making the best out of it and stretching the most out of every minute.
Well, your focus is certainly adaptation. And for me, once I became privy to the current environmental trends, I have found it very difficult to unlearn what I've learned about global warming and our global interconnectedness socially and financially. Admittedly, it's been very debilitating at times. I often wonder, is what I'm doing right now contributing to the problem? And I'm sure a lot of people could relate to that. How do you personally balance living in our modern capitalist system while recognizing the significant challenges upon us?
That's a tough one, Michael. I think, you know, that is present with me almost every moment of every day because we are living in systems that we didn't create. You know, the systems that guide our social structures, our economic structures, our environmental structures were created centuries ago. And they are what shape our culture and how we're able to interact with each other and the world around us. And to a certain extent, there's a lot we can do about that as individual citizens. And then on the other end, it's very hard to drive systems level change. And so I think first just acknowledging that is really important. Don't necessarily have a lens into the minds of others, but I can certainly understand how this cognitive dissonance is affecting people's mental health, of understanding that, you know, we are kind of our cogs in this larger system, that we sense at a cellular level in our body something is wrong, something is broken, yet we still have to get up during the morning and go to work and provide for our children and pay our bills and really contribute to the systems that govern us right now. So how do I reconcile that or deal with it is, you know, taking every opportunity I can to change the systems within my own life, where I shop, where my money spends the night. You know, I think that is something that folks don't think about, is voting with your dollars. Every dollar you spent is a vote for your values. And, you know, whether we pull up our Amazon Prime cart and do that daily order or shop locally, those have huge implications that are split second decisions. And those are something that all of us have control over. What credit cards you're using? Are you using Chase? Are you using Amalgamated? These are all different values, where Chase is a large lender in extractive industries. And Amalgamated is, I think, one of the largest mission-driven banks that allows people to bank with their values. So just two examples of simple decisions that have really big impact in your own social structures that govern your own life. You know, and I think there's the decisions of the food you eat and where you're shopping. And, you know, if you're eating meat, is it grass-fed on holistically managed land? So there's a lot of things you can start breaking down as it relates to your consumption habits, your waste habits. You know, how are you sorting your waste stream? You know, at the Alliance Center, we actually have a hard to recycle station where you can bring those little baby food pouches that stack up when you have little ones, or batteries or light bulbs. So those things that are really hard to get rid of in normal recycling, we found an outlet for that at the Alliance. So, you know, I think for me personally, my husband and I talk about this a lot, is how do we live true to our values in the current day and age that we're in, and really breaking down the different elements of our life, and wherever we can make a change, make a conscious decision, and be intentional about that decision. Don't just be haphazard about it or disconnected from how you show up in your life. And once you start, you know, then it kind of gets addictive, and you can keep finding more and new and different ways to really live true to your values. And then at the end of the day, you know, recognizing and giving yourself a break. We have a saying in my family, the 80-20 rule, is try to live 80% pure to your values and give yourself a break the other 20% of the time, because in this day and age, you know, you can't be perfect to that. As I mentioned earlier, the systems that govern our lives are not necessarily set up for the expression of regenerative values or healing values or restorative values. They're very extractive and exploitative, and that's something that we're working to change.
Couple of key words there that you mentioned, awareness and intention. It certainly is an evolution to make change, especially if you lived in systems, as you mentioned, for so long, systems that give us a livelihood and maybe less than perfect at times, but something that's predictable, something that we're familiar with. And too often, that psychology behind that, part of the reason why people do settle for a status quo lifestyle or don't make change. It can be scary, and there's a lot of fear. What if I change this habit? Will that change my position socially or even financially? So there's a lot to consider there. Your career has transitioned from your corporate social responsibility experience with the world's leading hotel groups to now the executive director of the Alliance Center. What led to this evolution in your career?
That was an interesting phase in my life. And yes, you are right. I spent over a decade in kind of the belly of the beast in the corporate world, and kind of right out of college that I did that, right out of the Great Recession, actually, was at that point of my life. And I was able to make a large lasting impact in the companies I worked for, and, you know, still see a lot of the sustainability initiatives we rolled out in the hotel chains today, which is very rewarding. And kind of at the end of that tenure in my career, I was actually traveling as a task force general manager overseeing acquisitions and mergers. And I was gone for months at a time. And, you know, I was able to implement sustainability initiatives in these new properties, along with the operational and the brand rollout and whatnot. You know, at that point, I was, I would say, having a very successful corporate career and did some self-reflection as far as kind of to the question you asked earlier is how do I live 100% true to my values as much as I can? You know, that 80-20 rule, I guess I shouldn't say 100%. And really found that I wanted to dedicate every ounce of my professional energy into systems level change. And into systems level change in a community where I was ready to grow my roots and really settle down. And, you know, had a long conversation with my husband about what that would be and what that would look like. You know, at that time when I made that decision, I was a friend of the Alliance, I would say. I was there for all of their events and, you know, deeply engaged with the community for a couple years at that time and just absolutely loved the organization. And it was really this split second moment of clarity when I was in conversation with my husband about, you know, wanting, yearning for this career change where I could focus all of my efforts on sustainability. It just hit me that I wanted to work at the Alliance Center and nowhere else would do. It actually took me 2 years to make that change. I applied to several jobs with the organization and just wasn't quite the right fit. Part of the conversation, part of the journey with my husband was our financial stability as a family. As I said, I was having a very successful corporate career, compensated very well for that, and ended up having to take an enormous pay cut to join the Alliance Center in an entry-level position in the nonprofit sector as an events manager. There was a lot of trade-offs there, but it was really a values-driven decision. And I think it was one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. And now, almost 7 years later, I have the honor of leading the organization. So, you know, kind of making that transition, starting from the bottom and working my way up to the top has been really, really rewarding. And then being able to dedicate our work as an organization to driving systems level change in Colorado to create shared prosperity on a healthy planet, starting right here at home, has been the most rewarding endeavor of my professional career so far.
And this is definitely the perfect transition to talk more about the Alliance Center and the agenda. The specific intent of the organization seems to be to build a regenerative future. And I'm sure a lot of folks are wondering what this actually looks like. How do you define this concept?
And that's a great question, Michael. And it's not an easy one to answer. It's such a large concept and so much has to change before we can truly claim that we're in a regenerative society. But how do we define that? Let's start kind of with just the simple definition. Regenerative, really, if you were to look at synonyms or kind of replace it with another single word, would be restoring, renewing, healing, even. And so I think if we look at the point in time that we're at and where we're trying to go, the next bridge, I would say, the next journey for us, in my perspective, is a journey of healing. And that's really what regeneration is all about. Regrowth, renew, restoring, healing, regenerative. If you kind of think of it on a spectrum, and so in front of you, if you have just a, you know, a line graph, and on the far left side of the paper is degenerative or kind of business as usual. It's extractive, it's exploiting, it's doing harm while it's operating and, you know, making a profit and existing, but there's harm being done. If you move one step along the spectrum closer to the right side, then you get doing less bad. In the middle of the graph, right, where the X and Y axis would intersect at zero, you have sustainable. And that's really where a lot of conversations are right now, is how do we just purely sustain? If you move beyond that, further to the right, then you have resilient. And one step further to that is regenerative. And so it's really a spectrum of being, if you can think of it in that way, from where we currently are is degenerative. And where we're trying to get is regenerative. And so it's a journey, and it's an imperfect journey along the way. Through the pandemic, we really looked at how do we leverage this time of change to create a regenerative future. And through that, we actually listened to hundreds of Coloradans all across the state in a series of virtual sessions last summer, so the summer of 2020, called the Colorado Emergent Series. And in that session, we asked Coloradans, you know, how is the pandemic affecting them and what is the future they want coming out of it? And time again, from hundreds of people in every session, these theories, these themes, these concepts of regeneration came forth. And folks were calling for a time of healing and restoring before we could really get into driving the systems level change that we know needs to happen. So with that, you know, we had to look at it. What are these themes of regeneration that keep coming up? And how do we actually define that, knowing that people need a common definition of what we're working towards? And so through these listening sessions, and these were concepts that were generated by hundreds of citizens, not just myself, so it was really a crowdsourced definition, is creating a robust localized economy that meets human needs abundantly, and equitably provides all of the resources that we need to not only survive, but also thrive. So that's this concept of a regenerative economy that we're galvanizing folks around. And within that, there are really eight different kind of fundamentals of regeneration that came from the Colorado Emergent series. But I think, you know, one key takeaway for regeneration is it's really about restoring, renewing. Regeneration is about healing and making things better.
And over the years, the Alliance Center has attracted the likes of governors and other politicians in Colorado. What do you think draws their attention, and how has this evolved?
You know, I think there are many factors that go into how we draw attention or how we draw a collaboration with key decision makers in the state, be them elected officials or large corporations. And I think part of that is that we are intentionally a big tent. As the Alliance Center, we don't take on just one issue and kind of put our blinders on in a silo and advance, you know, one climate change solution. We actually take a very holistic view of the changes that need to be made. And that enables us to attract more attention and more collaboration, more partners for driving systems level change, because it's not just one issue and folks can see themselves in the work and see different value sets represented. So whether we're working on advancing regenerative agriculture across the state, or accelerating the transition to renewable energy, or building an equitable workforce, all of these have different kind of elements that resonate with different folks, and that enables us to build this big tent. Since 2004, we've been very intentional about building a diverse network. And so we actually have a network across government, academia, for-profit, nonprofit, business leaders, community leaders, media partners. And we work with them over the years to first identify some of the largest problems that we're facing, provide thought leadership and what some solutions could be, and then wherever possible, move that thought leadership into action with community-led initiatives. And I think that model in and of itself actually draws a lot of attention from policymakers and from corporations in Colorado who want to leverage their power for good, because they know that they can come to the Alliance Center and find a community of like-minded individuals and professionals who are all working together in their own way to make the world a better place, starting right here at home. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, that makes people feel good. You know, it makes you want to get up in the morning. It makes you smile when you're engaging with the work. It makes your heart feel warm. And that type of energy is something folks are attracted to. I talk a lot about our work being both magnetic, where it's attracting energy to it, but also expansive, where it's growing and scaling and constantly looking to evolve and improve. And it's just a very exciting community to be a part of.
To sidestep just a moment, to paint a picture of the politics in Colorado, there seems to be this red and blue combination making it a purple state, which is kind of interesting. It's almost as if Colorado is the case study for the U.S., where you have a number of different political perspectives and agendas coming together to debate over something that affects all of us. A key word that I have heard in some of the things that you've said is resiliency. And that seems to be part of the attraction for many of these policymakers and corporations who now see how their business may be affected if we don't make some type of change in the environmental sector. The fundamentals that you mentioned earlier, as you had said in earlier communication, we could really spend an hour on each of these fundamentals and really any of the questions I'm asking today. How do you decide the path that's most appropriate to focus on and financially invest in at any given point?
That's a tricky one, Michael. I wish I had a short, pithy answer for that. I think the honest answer is a lot of patience and, you know, I call it landscape mapping. Looking at what is it that we're trying to do and mapping out all the key stakeholders, all the impacts, what are all the levers? And then from that, you know, what are the most effective levers that we can pull to drive change? So a lot of it is honestly analyzing data and really going deep on the research to understand what's truly happening here and keep going deeper, you're not just looking at the symptoms, but pulling back the layers and truly identifying the root causes of the challenges that we're facing, to better inform the solutions that we'll implement. You know, I think another part of this is the crowdsourced nature of the coalition. When we actually launched the Colorado Emergent series the summer of 2020, We did not launch it with the intention to then also form a coalition, but the outcry from our community, the upwelling of support was so overwhelming. I had several conversations with individuals, and one I can remember very clearly where a woman called me in tears and just said, "Brenna, this is the most hope I've had in years, and you are giving me a reason to get out of bed in the morning and get engaged in work. And I haven't had that for years. Please don't let it end with the report called The Guidebook to a Regenerative Recovery." And that, you know, that at that time was kind of where the work was going to end. We were going to author the report, pass it off to the governor, and do what we could to help accelerate the change, but not necessarily take on this whole new body of work. But again, the uprising from our community, the upwelling of support was so powerful that we felt compelled to actually form the Regenerative Recovery Coalition. So it's about a year old now. We launched it in November of 2020, and it has over 330 members now in the coalition. And a lot of the work that we do is actually crowdsourced from coalition members. Well, we'll send out their opinion or feedback on things. We have working groups that meet regularly. And in those working groups, ideas start to bubble up. And we're constantly mining and being aware in those meetings to pick out these gems of ideas or these concepts and just start to keep track of them, trying to force ourselves into action right away, but to let the thought and the strategies emerge from the people who are closest to the work. And it really is providing a diversity of thought and information and strategies and perspectives that we're able to weave into this rich tapestry of change. You know, if an idea is really just going to advance one concept, that's interesting, that's great, you know, we'll give attention to it. But where we really get excited, where what lights my fire is when I find these ideas that actually weave themselves through all the different fundamentals that enable us to start to pull together a more cohesive project where it's, you know, one defined project, but it's driving change across the eight fundamentals of a regenerative recovery and driving change across many different systems. And those are where we decide to really funnel our energy and efforts. And then once we have a concept of a project that we want to advance, then of course we start seeking funding, looking what grants we qualify for, what's available from the government, what's available from our donor network. And through that, we get a lot more data and information about what's exciting the philanthropic network. You know, what are the opportunities that align with the foundation money that's out there? And where can we funnel that or direct that to these projects? So we don't chase the money. You know, we're not looking at grants and saying, oh, there's a grant here for this project. Let's create something around that. You know, we're really focusing on understanding the landscape of what's happening, understanding the voice and the desire of the community, of the coalition that we mobilize, and then really looking for projects that intersect or weave between multiple different fundamentals of a regenerative recovery. And so what are those fundamentals? I've said them a lot. You're probably going, well, what are they already? So we have the transition to renewable, distributed, reliable energy. We're looking at strengthening the resiliency and increasing Colorado's regenerative food system locally, increasing equitable access and opportunity, and really looking at ways that we can chip away at oppressive frameworks and create systems of equity. We're looking at building the industries and the workforce of the future. Another one is really investing in both natural and built infrastructure. And this one's, I think, pretty unique because a lot of times folks look at infrastructure being either natural with ecosystem services or built, our built environment, our buildings, our houses. And we're actually looking at those combined from a regenerative society. How do both our natural and built infrastructure need to intersect and relate in a healthy ecosystem? Three more of the fundamentals. We have building Colorado's circular economy. And if that's a new term to you, the circular economy really looks at the flow of goods and services and waste in society, where you reduce waste and you increase the circular closed loop nature of how things move through our society, where outputs of one business or one company, their waste, can become inputs to another company. And then the last two are really looking at increasing civic engagement and strengthening our democratic institutions. And then looking at how do we leverage diverse partnerships to actually accelerate this movement. So looking at everything through collaboration. And then getting back to your question, Michael, is we really focus on where projects and efforts can touch and accelerate ideally all of those eight fundamentals in one, or if not all of them, then as many as possible.
Translating these fundamentals, especially in regenerative agriculture, can often be a challenge. Organizations and policymakers speaking different languages and prioritizing social progress in opposing ways. How do you think we can bridge this gap between idealism and pragmatism?
I think it's actually important to really hold space for both. We have to give ourselves a space to vision and dream of the world that we want. And if you look at, you know, the modern dominant narrative of our current day and where we're going, it's bleak, it's doomsday, it's, you know, the world is burning and there's violence everywhere. And, you know, that's what Hollywood also perpetrates. And so you see this repeating pattern, this dominant narrative to everybody every day of this is who we are and this is where we're going as a society. And there has to be another option. I think part of our great responsibility right now for those who are visionaries is to let that vision soar and share it broadly. Because we need desperately as a society to have a collective vision for humanity of a future that's better. You know, a future where all of our needs are met abundantly, when people are treated with dignity, we're governed by systems of equity, allowing everybody to thrive, where we live in harmony with each other and the environment. And that vision doesn't exist in a lot of the dominant paradigms that we feed our intellect every day, that we feed our children every day in the culture that they're growing up in. So I think the concept of idealism, or, you know, I call it, you know, being a visionary, is actually really important to hold space and to allow folks who are visionaries in this day and age a supported environment where they can vision together to, again, weave this tapestry of a regenerative future. And then, of course, you know, a vision is nothing without action. And if all it does is stay in a vision, then what we're doing is dreaming. And we need to bring in the dose of pragmatism and strategic implementation to then achieve these goals. And look at, you know, if this is where we're trying to go, a vision of a regenerative society, then how do we get there? And I always like to actually work backwards from the goal and kind of look at, okay, what are the key milestones? What's the time frame that we need to accelerate change, and at what scale, at what pace? And then we have to put together a strategic plan to do that. You know, it can't just live in a dream. We have to look at, what does this look like, boots on the ground? What are the key levers for change? Who are the key players? And then pull it together to make it happen. You know, so with the Regenerative Recovery Coalition, I think a great example of that are these projects that we're actually starting to implement. This vision of a regenerative society is out there and we're taking steps towards it every day. But then what does that look like in reality? So we have, you know, the pragmatism of the coalition is that we actually have three main ways we drive action. One is working with decision makers, helping to craft and guide the state's recovery plan and advise on policy. This year alone, we actually were influential, as you said earlier, in 20 new state laws and directed $456 million of state's ARPA funds. So that's the federal recovery stimulus dollars. So we are actually able to have this dream, this vision of a regenerative society, and then translate that into a policy platform and successfully pass 20 new state laws that are all in alignment with this vision of a regenerative future. So that's pragmatism. That is systems level change in action right here in Colorado. The other two ways we drive action are really accelerating the work of our members. As you can imagine, we have 330 members, all are doing amazing work. The favorite part of my job is a matchmaker and being kind of the connective tissue behind all of these change agents to better understand who's doing what and who needs to be connected to who. Because a lot of times we'll see small pockets of the same work happening in silos, and our joy as the Alliance Center is being able to connect those entities. Not tell them what to do, not take the reins of control at all, but just say, hey, you're both doing amazing work in this area. We think you should meet. And so much action actually comes out of those interactions. So the second way we drive change in a pragmatic way is better understanding the work of our members and where can we help accelerate their action. So for one example, we have a group, Zero Footprint, in the coalition, and they work on regenerative agriculture and reducing food waste. And they have this really wonderful model that is very successful in California. They came to Colorado, you know, and are looking to kind of get it up and running. And we have connected them to the Colorado Department of Agriculture and are in the process of launching a statewide soil health challenge in an official partnership with the state. And so being able to find these great models and just amplify, we're a catalyst for the good work already happening, is another way that we can work towards this vision or the dream of a regenerative future. And then last, as you know, I've talked a lot about mapping the landscape, and I don't mean the geographic landscape. In part, yes, I do, but I mean more understanding what's happening in different sectors towards this vision of a regenerative future, accelerating it where we find those models of great work, and then identifying the gaps. And those gaps have informed projects that we're starting to implement as a coalition. We have several different ones. I'll give you one, for example, is our equitable workforce development campaign. which is really a three-part campaign. One is looking at policies needed to incentivize regenerative industries in the state. So renewable energy, the clean energy economy, regenerative agriculture, the circular economy and waste. We need those industries to create a demand for skilled labor in regenerative fields. So working on a policy platform to do that. The second part is a communication campaign to destigmatize the skilled trades. The skilled trades have a stigma. Going to community college or apprenticeship, there's this cultural stigma around not going to a four-year university. And that needs to change because university education is not accessible. And we're finding most of the folks graduating from university are saddled with insurmountable amounts of student loan debt. And there's another path. The skilled trades are high career-making trades that have high earning potential. Some folks in the skilled trades make more than I do as an executive director of a nonprofit. Hey, and I'm fine with that. But we need to get that message out more about the demand and the importance of skilled trades. And then the third part of this project is actually a tip-to-tail workforce development pipeline, where we're connecting job seekers with community organizations, providing wraparound services with credentialing organizations, upskilling, reskilling job seekers into the clean energy economy. And then on the other end of the pipeline, we have a robust industry partnership with folks in solar energy and storage, primarily through the Colorado Solar and Storage Association, to then provide job fairs and connect these job seekers directly into employment. So that's, again, a kind of a three-part strategy to develop an equitable workforce development pipeline in Colorado to accelerate the transformation to renewable energy. So I know I shared a lot there, but I think it's really important to hold space for both the visionary, the creative side, as well as the strategic pragmatism and the implementation to achieve this vision, because at the end of the day, a vision with no action is just a dream.
There is quite a bit that's been said there. It's just a reminder of the comprehensive effort that's needed to make such a great change within an existing system. And really, in so many ways, you're rewriting that system with your efforts, especially with these projects that you describe. What's required in the message to secure the attention of policymakers and corporations, all of which are very instrumental in the change that we desire?
Messaging is paramount, and how we frame things is of the utmost importance. There's kind of this war of words right now, if you really think of it from a social standpoint, you know, where if you look at what's going on with the rhetoric and the divisiveness and the tribalism that's happening, our words are tearing us apart. And I think the power of words can also heal. And so how we frame messages is really important. And, you know, understanding what audience you're speaking to and how do you nuance the same message, the same values, just with slightly different framing to resonate. And I think that's something that we're trying to weave in very intentionally and into the messaging of the coalition is this unified, inclusive language. At the same time, you can't be all things to all people. And so being very firm with what we're trying to do and what is our identity, what are our values, and then how can we shape the message from that? You know, I think when we talk to lawmakers, elected officials, and also corporations, I think those are the two stakeholders you asked about. One of the biggest fallacies in past sustainability communication from any angle, any side, is that environmental sustainability or social well-being comes at the detriment to profit and the economy. And I think one of the biggest things that we can do is change that narrative, is that there's actually a ton of money to be made in the transition to a regenerative society. Tons of money to be made. And so how do we actually look at this intersection of profitability, a thriving economy with environmental well-being and social well-being? And I think that's really the sweet spot of the messaging and of the work authentically is holding space for all three of those things. It's not a trade-off. It's not either or. You know, we need economic systems to fuel our social systems. That's how our human structure is built. And so pitting one against the other is a zero-sum game. And so that's something I think is really powerful in our work and in the messaging is how do we actually drive a robust economy, drive profitability in companies while healing the environment and looking at social well-being and systems of equity.
I would certainly agree. And it seems that how the stakeholders value the success and growth of their companies could be the driving force for change or lack of change. How do you think corporations and smaller businesses should rethink and measure success and growth within a capitalist system?
You know, I think that's a really important angle to look at. One of the challenges that we get, particularly from a shareholder primacy model or looking at publicly traded companies, are these concepts of quarterly returns and quarterly results and pressure on the CEO and the corporation to have consistent positive quarterly results. And that is, you know, in the long run, actually a zero-sum game because we're incentivizing the wrong behavior. My opinion is we actually need to start looking at returns and results over a longer arc of progress, and also incorporating concepts of environmental and social well-being in all aspects of the company. There's kind of been this theory of a triple bottom line for years that folks are so fond of. You know, in and of itself, I think the intention is good, but the implementation of a triple bottom line is actually really problematic because one, companies aren't going to keep three books, a book for profit, a book for people, a book for planet. That's just not business reality. And two, if it's siloed out like that, it compartmentalizes these issues and it compartmentalizes the benefit to people, planet, and profit. And when times are tough, if things are siloed out, what's the first couple things companies are going to cut is probably the social side and the environmental side and really focus on the profitability. So I think making this evolution for companies from away from the triple bottom line and into what we call an integrated bottom line, where people, planet, profit is all measured, but it's measured in a holistic way that's incorporated into all aspects of business. So I think looking at a longer arc of progress for performance indicators, looking at kind of a different way to measure or keep books based on an integrated bottom line. So there's also a couple other elements to pull in here. And one is really the concept, again, of a full cost accounting is looking at, you know, what are the externalities that companies and businesses don't bring into their balance sheet or their business decisions or their impact? And how do we actually start to fully account for that in a corporate setting around a board table to actually look at the true impact companies are having in the environment and in the communities in which they operate, not just their economic bottom line? So I think those are important ways to broaden the conversation and just start taking steps along the way. And then, of course, for our publicly traded companies, there's a whole concept of SRI or socially responsible investing or ESG. And there's a huge uptick in trend and desire for this. And I mentioned earlier about knowing where your money spends the night. And this is huge, that something everybody can do, whether you're a corporate exec or just an individual with a retirement account, is really divesting your money away from companies that harm and into companies that heal, into sustainable or regenerative companies. So talk to your investment advisor as an individual. That's something you can do very quickly. As a publicly traded company, there's this movement away from shareholder primacy, where shareholders are the only thing that matters, and that's what companies exist for, is a profitability of their shareholders, into stakeholder advocacy, and really looking at, again, the full cost accounting of the impact companies have in all different elements, all their stakeholders, the community, the environment, their supply chain, their employers, their shareholders, of course, we don't take them out. And then balancing the impact across all of those different stakeholders while driving a profit. So I think from a company standpoint, there's a lot of different tools and tips people can do to just start kind of chipping away and making progress. And in some situations, it's going to be transformational and change can happen very quickly and at large scale, depending on kind of the decision makers in the company. And in other situations, it's going to be incremental and it's going to take a champion kind of at all different levels to just start to suggest ideas and start to open conversations up to a different way of doing business that's good for the planet, good for people, and is profitable along the way.
To strip it down another way, if these companies are interested in their long-term success, they won't be able to achieve that if there's a lack of resources and consumers. So obviously, it's important to think about their resiliency. And if it means sacrificing a couple percentage points of profit in the short term, at least they'll have the value of long-term sustainability. And that's something I would assume should be valued quite a bit. But we also know that we live in a society where people abide by the value of survival of the fittest, and it's at the individual and the social level. I don't quite understand how we could dismantle this trained mindset. But I'm wondering, is this something that you see quite a bit?
You know, not in my current world. I don't. I'm pretty insulated from that, which I feel blessed and privileged to be able to surround myself and be in community with folks who are so values aligned. You know, I did see it a lot in my corporate career, and that's part of why I wanted to make a move and get out of, you know, the corporate hamster wheel and more into driving systems level change. But I think it really depends on the company that's out there. And the companies we work with, the companies that are part of the coalition and part of the alliance's community, are just the best of the best. I mean, they're here for the right reasons, really wanting to leverage their power as a force for good and not, you know, just focusing on profitability at all cost. That doesn't say it doesn't exist. There's lots of companies out there who still have that mindset. And those are, you know, not necessarily the companies that we're working with. And you could say, well, those are the companies you need to work with the most to drive change. And I think that we'll get there. And we're really trying to build this broad base of support and movement, really, of change agents who are values aligned and work through the folks who understand the change that needs to be made as we continue to broaden the tent and build a more inclusive movement.
Well, I just want to finish out with a couple more questions. And the first of which is, if you can implant one thought in the minds of all humans, what would it be?
That it's not too late for climate. I think a lot of the news out there is doom and gloom, and it can make folks feel like there's no hope and feel caught in despair. And the truth is, if we act quickly and collectively, there is time to right this wrong, right the ship, and find ways to live in harmony with each other and the natural world. So it's not too late. And there's a community of change agents and a growing movement who are coming together to address this. And we need you. We invite you to come join us and come work with us in the Regenerative Recovery Coalition.
Yeah, I believe the same. And I have had the opportunity to sit in on some of the meetings. And it is amazing what has been accomplished in just a short amount of time. And all of us, maybe in one way or another, have proven some of our resiliency at the individual level and certainly socially during the pandemic. So now is the time to really take that step towards this connection between the environment and our economy. Now, I would like to jump to one more question. I have a 4-year-old son, Preston. I'm wondering, what is one lesson that you would like to share with him?
Well, I have a 4-year-old as well. His name is Louis. And one of the things that we're working with him on right now, you know, that I think is applicable to all humans, I work on it myself, is the power of our attitude and understanding that we can't control all of what happens to us, but we can control our attitude and how we react to things. And that really can make the difference.
Yeah, and that's a good lesson for adults as well. So thank you for sharing that. And finally, where can people learn more about you and the Alliance Center?
Well, I appreciate that, Michael. I'm not very active on social media, and that is an intentional personal choice. I do have a LinkedIn account, so happy to connect with anyone there. And then, of course, tune into the Alliance Center. You can join our tenant community, our membership portal, or even the Regenerative Recovery Coalition. And there's lots of opportunities for us to engage in any of those bodies of work. So check out thealliancecenter.org to find out more.
Brenna, you have taken on quite an agenda here, and we couldn't be more thankful for your efforts to shape our environmental future. Thank you for your time today, and I wish you the best.
Thank you, Michael. It was wonderful spending time with you as well.
If you find this podcast interesting, there are many ways you can support it. You can review the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatever podcast platform you listen on. You can share it on social media with your friends. You could blog about it, discuss it on your own podcast, or make a monetary contribution to help us with our mental health and environmental advocacy on theelementsofbeing.com. Thank you for supporting the show. Listeners like you make it worthwhile.